We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection. And the majority of the time, she will choose life. But they can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby or visit preborn.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Thursday, October the 24th, 2024. Thank you for listening to AFR. Tim Wildman here with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Howdy, Tim. Good to be here.
And Christopher Woodward.
Good morning.
Coming up this hour, we have Steve Tiber from 8 Days of Hope. Kind of the forgotten story now is the aftermath of the hurricane and how that impacted the people in the 4 or 5 different states. And 8 Days of Hope had been working around the clock, doing their part, what they can do to help out these folks that are in dire still in dire situations. Yeah. So we'll talk to Steve Tiber about that. And then also Dr. Robert Gagnon will be on at 10:45 Central Time, and we're going to talk about the election coming up, and there are a lot of, it's being reported that a lot of Christians, Fred, are going to sit it out.
Millions, we are told.
I don't know if I necessarily believe that. We'll have to kind of wait till after the election to find out, but I think that's a huge mistake.
Especially in this election.
Monumental.
Yes.
Can't sit out, can't stay at home, and Dr. Robert Gagnon makes that case, too, and we're going to talk to him about that coming up in about 45 minutes or so. All right, you are listening to Today's Issues, and Chris, what's our first story today?
Well, Vice President Kamala Harris had a town hall meeting last night on CNN.
She did?
She did. Yeah. Anderson Cooper was the moderator. She did take questions from the audience. One of the things that people are focusing on, and understandably so, is an exchange in which Anderson Cooper, I think, held her feet to the fire over her comments about Trump and the border policy and the border wall. Listen, it's a little over a minute, but let's listen to it, clip one.
Under Donald Trump, you criticized the wall more than 50 times. You called it stupid, useless, and a medieval vanity project. Is a border wall stupid?
Well, let's talk about Donald Trump and that border wall. So remember, Donald Trump said Mexico would pay for it? Come on, they didn't. How much of that wall did he build? I think the last number I saw is about 2%. And then when it came time for him to do a photo op, you know where he did it? In the part of the wall that President Obama built.
But you're agreeing to a bill that would earmark $650 million to continue building that wall.
I pledge that I am going to bring forward that bipartisan bill. Let's just fix this thing. Let's just fix it. Why is there any ideological perspective on this? Let's just fix the problem.
To fix the problem, you're doing this compromise bill. It does call for $650 million that was earmarked under Trump to actually still go to build the wall.
I'm not afraid of good ideas where they occur.
So you don't think it's stupid anymore?
I think what he did and how he did it did not make much sense because he actually didn't do much of anything. I just talked about that wall, right? We just talked about it. He didn't actually do much of anything.
But you do want to build some wall.
I want to strengthen our border.
Is that it?
We edited that down.
Okay, how long?
Four time. Well over 2 minutes.
It was so rich, though, I could have listened on and on and on to that logic and reasoning. Listen, she has no plan for the only plan she has for immigration reform, whatever they call it, is she's going to talk about a pathway to citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, a pathway to citizenship. You'll hear the Democrats say this, and some Republicans too, but you'll hear the Democrats. That's their answer to massive illegal immigration into our country and the problems associated with millions of people coming here. We don't know who they are. They're a burden on cities. And anyway, all they're going to say is we need to create a pathway to citizenship. So their answer to this is just to give everybody citizenship. Mm-hmm. That way you don't have illegal citizens, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's her answer. Also, she said, good for Anderson Cooper. He said, when Donald Trump was in office, you called the wall stupid.
And medieval.
Mm-hmm. And medieval.
Yes. Good on Anderson Cooper for asking the tough and reminding her what she said about Donald Trump's policy. Listen, this is why when the polling is done with regards to the major issues voters are thinking about, border security is a huge one. Mm-hmm. And she is losing on it.
Yep,
and what you just heard is the reason she is losing on it. She was asked about, would you continue? She says Donald Trump's approach to this was stupid. All right? Under Donald Trump, 500 miles of border wall were built. And right at the end, too, is the other thing. She's not interested in building a border wall. This is a woman who doesn't want borders.
No, she doesn't.
She doesn't. That's the bottom line in all of this. She wants, you know, the pathway to citizenship. They want, she and Biden, remember, I keep bringing people back. Joe Biden, when he was candidating to run in 2020, said he would invite a surge on the border. He kept his promise. Mm-hmm. Come one, come all. They told the border agents, open it up.
Right.
Just let them come in.
Right.
And we'll give them a sheet of paper saying when you're supposed to show up and prove that you're claiming asylum.
Or give them a cell phone and show them an app.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. So come one, come all. And that will be her approach. That's why she is losing big time on this issue. By the way, there's a couple of stories out here this morning to remind people of the dangers that the Harris-Biden administration has caused for this country. There's a story out by Fox News this morning. Headline, illegal Chinese immigrant exposed hundreds in Louisiana to rare and dangerous tuberculosis strain. Yesterday, the Attorney General of Louisiana announced he was suing Homeland Security and Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. Why? Because back several months ago, under this administration, a Chinese national entered this country illegally, turned himself over to border security people, and then he was shipped, this Chinese national, to a facility in Louisiana. He's in there with about 100 or 200 other detainees. But what they have just found out is that this Chinese national has a rare, aggressive, and drug-resistant form of tuberculosis, which carries high mortality rates, the lawsuit states. So that is just one example. And then there's this other story which came out in the last 24 hours. DHS, Department of Homeland Security, identifies hundreds of migrants with possible ties to that bloodthirsty Venezuelan gang. So, folks, there's real results to this, and we've talked about before, Tim, what this has meant for communities that are now facing these tens of thousands of these migrants that have been allowed into the country, New York, Chicago, but many other communities, what they're facing. There was a story yesterday of another community. 20,000 migrants have descended on this community. These people don't speak English. They're going into the schools. The teachers can't do anything with them. This is a monumental, huge, absolutely huge problem for this country, and it's all in the lap of Biden and Harris.
No, you got that right, and they listen, all their words and deeds, by all they are, I'm talking about the Harris and Biden.
Yes.
Up to this election now, has been pro-open borders. Mm-hmm. They have not done it. In fact, they Biden and Harris, when he first went into office, you remember, he was proudly announcing that he was reversing everything that former President Trump had done to stop illegal immigration into America, which had basically had stopped it down to a trickle, Remain in Mexico policy, for example. And Biden and Harris made it clear we're removing all those barriers because they're immoral. People should be able to come into our country if they want to. and he invited a surge. And you remember Biden and Harris at the debate, both they said, do you want to pay for health to health care for anyone who comes here illegally? They didn't use the word illegally, undocumented or whatever. And Harris and Biden said, absolutely, we want to pay for all their health care.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yes.
So they're getting what they, the results of their policies, they're having to answer for now. Again, in this case, it's Harris. Biden doesn't have to answer.
Yes.
Because he's not going to be president anymore. He's not even running. But Harris is having to answer. And even liberal interviewers like, what's his fellow's name?
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper is showing her hypocrisy and her double talk. And she only said it was stupid, the wall, when Trump was in office, wanted to build it.
Yes.
When now that she is running and she has said, I'm going to have this bipartisan bill that I'm going to sign, which also, as Anderson Cooper pointed out, has money for a wall, he said, is it still stupid? And she wouldn't answer it.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
She needs to say yes or no.
Nope.
Right.
I mean, she's like, they talk about word salad. Right. That's true. Word salad means she just says a bunch of stuff and it doesn't, it's not illogical and it doesn't even make sense or mean anything. That's what she's good at.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Tim, I believe if she becomes the next president of the United States, she will continue the Biden-Harris policy.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question.
She'll do away with ICE.
Yeah, no more wall will be built. She will take the money from this bill that she keeps promoting all the time. She would take the money for that. She said she would hire more Border Patrol agents. But those Border Patrol agents, will they be?
No, they'll be the welcome wagon.
They'll be the welcome wagon. They'll help with the paperwork.
Yeah, give everybody who crosses over illegally Subway coupons, but that's about all they're going to be doing. Listen, her base, just to make clear, the part of the Democratic Party, not all Democrats are as far left. Now, a lot of them, are, but they're not as far left on this issue as Harris is. Some of them are fairly reasonable, some of them. And they get more reasonable near election time. I'm talking about on this massive illegal immigration problem by millions and millions and millions of people coming here. They're here now. We don't know who they are. The people who she identifies with otherwise during a normal, not a political campaign stop, is the AOC types. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's who Harris is. Harris is the AOC of the Senate. Okay, she was when she was in the Senate. So don't let her trick you or fool you. She doesn't believe in borders. That's why she called the border wall stupid. That's just the way she's trying to appeal to people in the middle now so that she can get elected president. Mm-hmm. And it's not working.
Nope.
It's not working for her because she's not standing by her convictions if she has any.
No.
Go ahead.
Now, this next clip is much, much shorter. Regarding her claims of bringing a new way forward and promising to fix it on day one, Anderson Cooper took a moment to ask, why didn't you do these things while you were VP these last 3.5 years? Don't take my word for it. Clip two.
You've been in the White House for 4 years. You were vice president, not the president. But why wasn't any of that done the last 4 years?
Well, there was a lot that was done, but there's more to do, Anderson. And I'm pointing out things that need to be done. That haven't been done, but need to be done. And I'm not going to shy away from saying, hey, these are still problems that we need to fix.
Now, was she referring to the border in that clip?
She was talking to a number of things by that point, because she also called for a national ban on price gouging, which people would call price controls.
That's just pandering to people.
There's already laws against price gouging. We don't need a national ban on it.
But it's also scary. She calls it price gouging. Price gouging is things that governments warn about in the case of a hurricane.
Yeah, where people jack up the price of gasoline.
In very hard times.
Or hotel rooms.
Here's what scares me. She calls it price gouging. I believe what she's talking about is national price control.
Yeah.
There's not price gouging. price gouging does go on, but only in cases like what you're talking about, Fred. Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why she's concerned about price gouging is because we know a couple of things about her. She loves Doritos, and we know from her campaign videos, which are staged, that she buys her Doritos at truck stops. And gas stations generally mark up snack foods. Therefore, she probably thinks Doritos are that much everywhere because she's buying jacked up high-priced Doritos.
Well, I think she should drop the border talk and just ignore it and appeal to people who do buy Doritos at convenience stores. Like me, you know what I'm saying? Mm. I'll listen to that conversation.
Sure.
You want to talk about kinds of Doritos you want to buy. Listen, this is a big, I'm surprised at Anderson Cooper and CNN. I really am, that they were as tough on her as they were.
But we talked yesterday, there's a bit of a trend that's going on in the last three or four days. Haley Jackson at NBC had her on, Kamala Harris on, asked some tough questions.
Yeah.
And we're kind of surprised at this, but I do believe the mainstream media understands her credibility is in dire straits right now.
Yeah.
I think she's going to lose.
It would be nice if they had done this the entire time that she's been in office.
Yes.
Because this is what their job is.
Yes.
We shouldn't be surprised.
Yes, I agree with you, Chris, but I don't think she made herself available.
Well, that's true.
Yes.
She's only available now because she has to be.
Joe was on the beach, and she was somewhere. Just,
remember, they hid her. The White House hid her because she was so bad with the media interviews.
Yes.
And the trend continues here. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'll expand more. I do think Trump's going to win. She's going to lose. That's my own personal opinion. Others may not share that. That's fine, but we're going to talk about that next half hour with Robert Gagnon. It's going to be very, very close. It appears to be. Listen, there's a lot of great work being done by Christian charities and ministries in response to the hurricanes plural, but certainly Hurricane Helene that went through, 3 weeks ago or so, and just did such severe damage in Florida and Georgia and North Carolina, Tennessee, and maybe some other places too. But 8 Days of Hope is the ministry almost all of you are familiar with. It's a outreach that we support that helps people in the aftermath of natural disasters, and they go all over the country all year long. And Steve Tiber is the executive director / president, and he joins us now from, I don't know where Steve is today. Steve, good morning. Where are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. I got to look out the window. I think it was North Carolina and Georgia the week before that and Texas before that. But actually today I'm in Buffalo, New York, my hometown. So
okay.
I'm not on site, but I've been to all the states you just mentioned.
Okay, Steve, tell us about the work of 8 Days of Hope and give us an overview of what did you see when you went to Georgia and North Carolina and so forth?
You know, Tim, thank you for having me on. We've been doing this. We're starting our 20th year. We started after Katrina. The last 5 weeks, we have deployed more arms of the ministry in 30 days than we do in a typical year. We're on our 22nd deployment of 2024. We started in Perry, Florida, feeding people after Hurricane Helene landed. We set up a rapid response division in Valdosta, Georgia. We were there for almost 3 weeks. Today, as you and I speak, we're still in North Carolina, not far from Asheville, where about 400 volunteers are serving families, tarping the roofs, taking trees off their property, their roofs, gutting out homes that flooded. Flooding's been a big issue. And we've been serving nonstop. And it's amazing because today we're also in South Carolina with our rapid response heavy deployment, where we have bobcats and bucket trucks, trained, skilled chainsaw cutters, and they'll be there for the next 2 weeks. So this has been our busiest 30 days ever. And yet our mass feeding team, they went out and fed people. Over 17,000 meals were delivered to families in need through local churches. And it's been a whirlwind, but I'm so proud of the volunteers with 8 Days of Hope. They've done an amazing job, and we continue to serve as you and I speak.
Steve, it's Fred here. What did you see when you're in North Carolina? We have seen the images. Is it just as bad or even worse?
You know, it would make, and thank you, because that was the question that Tim asked. I'm sorry. So Hurricane Helene is the one unique storm. You know, Katrina and Harvey, those are the top two of the things that we've seen in our 19 years. But what made Hurricane Helene so unique is the depthness. So, you know, usually get a hurricane the first 7,500 miles from the shore, you know, mass destruction. As you get further away, you got fences and some shingles have blown off. But the flooding, guys, oh my gosh, the flooding in North Carolina and some of these resort areas, or not resort, rural areas, has just been mind-boggling. You know, we're doing something we've never done before. We're in a town just east of Asheville. Water has been a huge issue. Not cans of water, bottles of water. People showed up in a big way. But the town of Swannanoa, they're not going to have water for 6 weeks. They're entering in their third week of without water. So we went out and found a water truck. Kind of, it looks like a fuel tanker, but it's clean, fresh water. We set it up at a local church, and people from 6 in the morning till 10 at night are coming by, and they're bringing garbage cans that have, you know, a plastic liner, a plastic bag, a new plastic bag. They're bringing pots and pans, and they're coming for water nonstop. And so sometimes it's the basic, simple things. The need is there, and the need is there in North Carolina, guys. I mean, this there's no quick fix here. This is going to be a multiple-year recovery in North Carolina and some other parts as well.
Steve, we're hearing many people don't have shelter. That's a big need right now.
Still.
You know, yeah, Tim. You know, we one of our leaders shot a picture the other day of, you know, about 20 families just, you know, staying in tents in an area of their town where, you know, their home has been washed away, and they're looking for, you know, help. They're looking for food and water, and what's the plan. And so, you know, this has been a little disheartening. I mean, we're talking about, I believe, the greatest country in the world, America, and we are now 4 weeks from the disaster, Hurricane Helene, and we haven't even talked about Hurricane Milton because that presented some additional problems as well. But the need is great. But here's the good news, guys. A lot of ministries, you know, we're one of many. I know we're unique, and I'm thankful for the 60,000 volunteers that travel the country with us on a moment's notice. But the church is showing up. And so even though this is a dark time for people that are living in communities that lost loved ones, lost their home, their business, their church, maybe where they went to school, their keepsakes, all their belongings, the church is showing up in a big way. So I applaud other ministries like Samaritan's Purse and Convoy of Hope. You know, we're all doing all we can to help these families. So that is the good news and the silver lining in this storm.
Steve, how can people listening, if they want to, I mean, volunteer to help physically? I mean, go somewhere. I know you have a lot of volunteers that listen to American Family Radio, or they want to make a financial contribution to help you in your work. How can people do that?
Well, thank you, Tim. You know, American Family Radio is one of our 20 national partners, and we have a weekly radio show called Hope Reigns every Saturday morning that we share God-sized stories from Mission Field. It all starts with prayer, guys. You know, people are like, okay, Steve, really get to the point. That's the point. We need to be praying for the leaders of these towns who have never seen anything like this. Pray for the churches that themselves have suffered mass destruction or some challenges. You know, I talked to a gentleman today. He runs a foster home for kids and a retreat center, and their buildings got destroyed, and he's looking for help. So look for ways that you can connect with ministries like 8 Days of Hope. For us, go to our website, 8daysofhope.com. Sign up for email alerts. Maybe you can't go next week or the week after, but maybe you can go on the next storm, you know, to the next community that we go to. And as your point, donate. You know, you're one of our partners. You give financial resources to 8 Days of Hope every year along with our other 19 partners. And so anything donated online at 8daysofhope.com, or you can mail a check, or addresses on our website, on our Facebook page. Every dollar that you give will be spent to help out with Hurricane Helene. So thank you guys for your support. We love you, and couldn't do it without you.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. God bless you and your team and your work. Keep it up.
Thank you, brother. Take care. Go Bills.
Yeah, there you go. Steve Tiber. He's a huge, you know that, right?
Yes.
Buffalo Bills fan.
Dedicated.
Yeah. Well, I went to church with Steve for a long time before we moved to Buffalo, back home to Buffalo. And I mean, I'm just going to be honest. I would see him in the parking lot, right before church was over, because he had to get home to watch the game. I'm talking about 5 minutes now. Huh? And you might say to yourself, Tim, how do you know this? Weren't you also in the parking lot?
Self-indictment.
We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% of women reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they had received more support from others or had more financial security. And that's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. You see, the reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision and are being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them, which doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you not only support women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life and gives her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Back more than 2,300 years ago, a preacher wrote these words, "My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is." Well, there are millions of people who are seeking and searching for what the preacher had forgotten, happiness. More than 2,000 years later, another man by the name of Charles Farrar Brown made a famous statement concerning happiness. This is what he said. Now listen carefully, because this is good advice. "Let us all be happy and live within our means," he wrote, "even if we have to borrow the money to do it." And you'd be surprised at the number of people who are pursuing this elusive quality called happiness by following Brown's humorous advice. This statement seems odd, but has a world of truth in it. The most unhappy people in the world are those trying the hardest to be happy. We Americans annually spend billions and billions of dollars searching for this magic, evasive thing called happiness. Dr. Gallup, not the one who's living today, but his father, the fellow who had a way of finding the mood of the public, took a poll on happiness at one time. He found that the most unhappy people were those who frequented the taverns. How odd that seems. I was under the impression that people went to the honky-tonks to have a good time. Could it be by some strange quirk that a good time and deep-seated happiness are not the same thing? The great truth of life is that happiness comes as a byproduct. The best way in the world to miss happiness is to pursue it directly, to go searching for it in every dark bar and every tipping of the glass. Dr. Austin Fox Riggs once said, "Happiness is a byproduct of successful living. Happiness is a byproduct of holiness," or if you prefer a less religious word, just use the word wholeness. Holiness and wholeness, they both mean the same thing and bring you to the same place. Happiness is the result of an inner state, not outer security. Happiness comes not from without, but from within. Betty Barton, who had been paralyzed because of an automobile accident, once wrote for Life magazine these words, "We are suffocated so with things and with distractions that the real pursuit of happiness is impossible. Happiness is primarily an inner state, an inner achievement." And so it is. Happiness isn't the goal of life. Holiness is. "Seek first the kingdom of God," Jesus said. "Seek first the kingdom of God." Don't go after happiness or you'll miss it. Seek to do God's will and live by His plan, and happiness will come without your seeking it. This theme of matching happiness and holiness is one as old as the ages. "Happy is the man who takes refuge in the Lord," said the psalmist. Jesus, in His Sermon on the Mount, gave 9 ways to be happy. We call them the Beatitudes. You'll find them in the 5th chapter of Matthew in the Bible. I suggest you learn and live them. We spoke of Dr. Gallup in his happiness poll. He also had this observation to make. Our survey showed that the most happy people are those who have had a real religious experience. 'Tis true. Seek first the kingdom. After that comes happiness.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves. Colossians 1:13.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, and Chris, thank you for listening to AFR. I said before the break, and we're going to talk about Dr. Robert Gagnon coming up in just a few minutes. He wrote a column. What's the headline for the column, Fred? Do you have it?
Yes. Dear friend, to those choosing to abstain or vote third party in 2024.
Okay.
And basically the thrust is don't abstain.
Right. Don't abstain and don't. And third party voting is not effective. So that's what he's going to say. That's what he says. Anyway, I'm going to talk to him about that topic. I wrote a very similar column for our the Stan magazine. So we're going to talk to him about that because we can't have millions and millions of Christians sitting at home and not voting.
Yeah,
not voting, and so we'll address some of those questions on why those people might feel that way.
Yeah,
coming up in a few minutes, and why you need to go and vote. But anyway, we were talking before, the if you look at the polls in the various states that are reflected in the Real Clear Politics averages.
Yeah.
Trump is ahead in all the swing states now. That hasn't been the case up until the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And now keep in mind, they're all within the margin of error. But that's typically thought of as 3 percentage points, right?
Right.
But nonetheless, Harris was ahead, and now Trump is ahead in several of those swing states. What are the – do you have that in front of you, Chris?
I do. The battleground states, according to Real Clear Politics, would be Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. To build off of your point here, the RCP average, where they look at all the polls and try to come up with who's really winning, they now have Harris leading Trump only by 0.2. She's had a bigger lead.
Are you talking about the national?
The national polls, yes. Yeah. Well, so it's looking like it's his election to lose.
But there is a Wall Street Journal poll out this morning on national, and Trump is up 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to an interview this morning with one of the people that runs the Real Clear Politics site, and they were saying what he's saying is the trends right now across the country is in Trump's favor.
Yes.
Now, it's still very close.
Yes.
But the trends, and when you look back at previous elections, when you have somebody this late in the game, and we're only, 12 days away from Election Day, mm-hmm. when you're seeing these kinds of things, normally that person that's trending on the positive track is going to do well on Election Day, normally. And that is why one of the things that, Democrats are reading all of this too. And that is why that Kamala Harris has moved away from the issues. Now, the reporters are trying to bring her back to, like Anderson Cooper did on the border, et cetera, et cetera. But she has been told by her handlers, your only hope is to demonize Donald Trump every chance you get, which is why yesterday she came out with this Atlantic article.
Yes.
Trump wants Hitler-type generals. Mm-hmm. And they're quoting 4 anonymous sources in this Atlantic, but that has been denounced as totally untrue.
Yes. Yeah, I can play the audio of Kamala, and then we could segue into a rebuttal from former White House staffer Kayleigh McEnany. Let's begin here. For people that haven't heard about this, retired 4-star General John Kelly, who was one of Donald Trump's White House chiefs of staff, told the Atlantic that, supposedly, Donald Trump once said he wanted Hitler's kinds of generals. And that's where Kamala Harris went on national television yesterday. It's not a long clip. but it is clip five.
So yesterday we learned that Donald Trump's former chief of staff, John Kelly, a retired four-star general, confirmed that while Donald Trump was president, he said he wanted generals like Adolf Hitler had. Donald Trump said that because he does not want a military that is loyal to the United States Constitution. He wants a military that is loyal to him. He wants a military who will be loyal to him personally, one that will obey his orders even when he tells them to break the law or abandon their oath to the Constitution of the United States.
Now, someone that worked for Trump that says this is a whole bunch of malarkey is Kayleigh McEnany, who said this on Fox News Channel, clip 8.
The reason my antennas went up last night when I saw the name Jeffrey Goldberg is because I was on a tarmac in September of 2020, and a story popped from him in the Atlantic, and it was the suckers and losers story we have all heard. Within hours, I was able to collect more than a dozen individuals, several who were firsthand sources saying that never happened. My point is, this is based on four anonymous sources, mm-hmm. 2 weeks before an election, 100%. Disputed by people on the record, and yet it led a CBS News broadcast. Mm-hmm. What a shame.
She referred to Goldberg in that clip. Jeffrey Goldberg
is the reporter.
Is the editor mm-hmm. of The Atlantic who wrote this story. I don't think The Atlantic talked to Kelly directly. I think they talked to a source who was quoting Kelly on this and quoting Milley. You know, she went on to say, McEnany, that went on to say in that interview, in the response yesterday, she said there were people that Donald Trump hired who he found out very quickly didn't like him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kelly's one of them. Milley is another, General Milley. These are people who didn't like him. And of course, the bottom line is that they are all denying the truth of what Donald Trump supposedly said.
Okay. Now, if criticizing Donald Trump hurts your feelings, then you need to quit listening right now, because I'm about to criticize him, okay? Former President Trump. And I praised him a lot, and he's done a lot of great things. With his mouth, he is a loose cannon. It wouldn't surprise me that he said anything. It wouldn't. Now, I do agree with you guys' analysis. You need to, reporters need to have sources and open sources for what the way they say that. Donald Trump, when John McCain was running against, or was in the Senate, or running against him, I can't remember what it was. I think it was in the Senate, and he was mad at him. And he said, Trump said, I like prisoners who aren't caught. I like soldiers who aren't caught to be prisoners. That was repulsive. To say something like that. You remember that?
Yes.
So he says stuff like that. Trump does. And he called Kayleigh McEnany a globalist. John Kelly, his chief of staff for 2 years. Mm-hmm. General John Kelly, a chief of staff, four-star general.
2017
for 2 years. So if Trump hired a man for chief of staff and kept him for 2 years, and he didn't know he didn't like him? That says to me that Trump's not very smart then, if that's true. So I don't know what happened between General Kelly and President Trump. I just know that President Trump had a habit of running through people like nobody's business. And there's like 20 people who work for him in his administration who say, who don't like him. And he doesn't like them. So that's a reflection on Trump. I'm sorry. It is. Does that mean I'm not going to vote for him? No. Does that mean he wouldn't be a good president the second term around? No. Does that mean he didn't do some wonderful things as president? No, he did some great things as president. I voted for him when he went up against Biden, but he's got some bad traits that follow him around. And, but the good thing for him, I think, is that everybody, that this is all baked in, okay? They got some woman out there now that the Democrats are pulling out in the media to say Trump groped me in 1993. Did you see this?
Yeah.
It's just one of those.
Other people have it.
You know what, to my point a few minutes ago, the Democrats are going to, they're They're trying to capitalize on this Atlantic article. And on one of the other questions being asked right now, okay, why'd you wait till now? You've known all this for 4 years.
Why'd who wait till now?
Why did the campaign wait till now? Why did the Atlantic wait till now to do this story?
They're trying to affect the election.
Yes, they're talking about things that are 4 years old. Back to the Atlantic article, the people like Kayleigh McEnany and others are saying that Trump, even former Vice President Pence's one of his executives is saying the allegations made in the Atlantic article are false.
Yeah,
are false. So specifically, the comments in the Atlantic article are being denied that he talked about wanting Hitler-like generals.
Well, okay, I agree. But Trump has more than once talked in glowing terms about the dictator of China.
He can be his own worst enemy.
Yes.
Well, yeah, he admires him. Have y'all not heard this?
Oh, yeah, he is. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm saying that he is... Trump has said things that suggest that he's pro-authoritarian. And so that gives ammo to gives ammo to the left. When they criticize Trump, they just pull out these quotes like this. And it makes, to the average person, they go, that does sound bad for an American president to say how much he admires the dictator of China. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think Trump has hurt himself and hurts himself with his mouth. It's unnecessary. He doesn't have to do it, but that's just kind of who he is. But I do agree with you totally, Fred, that these stories now that are coming out, a week or two before the election, from the left and from the liberal media, they're trying to sway public opinion just a little bit so that their person wins, which is Harris.
Yeah. Well, and the timing, too, is... they're hoping that there is no time to refute these reports that came out.
Yeah.
That's why they're jamming it in the last few days.
But don't you think all this is baked in and people already pretty much made up their mind?
On his personality? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I think one more woman saying Trump groped me in 1993 is not going to matter.
Danica Patrick this week on Jesse Waters' show, we aired the clip of her earlier this week saying she was voting for the first time in this election, and oh, by the way, she said she was voting for Trump. She went on to say, look, I realize some people have personality issues with him or concerns, but you're not going out to dinner with him. You know, that was her point. Like, you know,
well, it's going to be one or the other.
Similar things.
It's one of two. It's either going to be Trump or Harris. There is, and we're going to talk to Robert Gagnon. Is he on? Okay. Is Robert on? We're going to talk to him about that because it's a, what do they call it? Not bilateral. You know what I'm talking about when it's down to two?
Yep.
There's a word for it that I've forgotten. All right, joining us right now is Dr. Robert Gagnon, a friend of our ministry for many years, and I asked him an hour ago, can you be on, after I read his blog, and so he said yes. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
This is Tim. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Tim. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate your ministry.
Thank you. Where are you joining us from today, and what is your current role?
I'm joining you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I am currently a visiting professor at Wesley Biblical Seminary.
Yeah, in Jackson, Mississippi.
That's correct.
Yes, but it's an international school, Wesley Biblical Seminary, that AFA and AFR, we've done a lot of promotion for them. It's a strongly evangelical school, training pastors and missionaries and all kinds of folks, Wesley Biblical Seminary. So I was reading your blog on Frank Turek's website. So Frank put it up there. It says, "Dear friend," this is your blog, Robert. "Dear friend," this is the headline. "Dear friend, to those choosing to abstain or vote third party in 2024. And I thought, I agree with what Robert's saying here. So I wanted to have you on. What's your thesis right here? If you can have a thesis in 300 word blog.
Very simple. If you're not voting, if you're not casting an effective vote against the candidate who's going to do by far the most harm, then effectively it's like handing that candidate a half vote. If normally you vote, in this case, conservative. So you're not supporting the candidate who's more conservative. You're not supporting the candidate who's going to do by far the most harm either. But your failure to vote will contribute to the failure of the more conservative candidate to win the election. So in effect, in this case, the Kamala Harris campaign should send you a thank you card if you decide that you're not going to vote for either candidate.
Yes, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. There's two considerations. I made this similar point in my column that is hitting the out there in the mail now, arriving in people's mailboxes for our magazine, The Stand. Okay. There's two considerations when you vote, especially in a presidential election, seems to me, as Robert is pointing out here. One, how much good can be done by voting for a particular candidate and their agenda and the things that you do agree with them on, which are good for the country. Number two consideration is how bad do we need to stop the terrible ideas that his opponent is promoting? You know what I'm saying? His or her
right.
Promoter. So a lot, oftentimes our fellow Christians who want to say, well, I'm voting between the lesser of two evils. And I want to say, well, that's one way to look at it. But there is, you just did say that there is a candidate that represents less evil, didn't you? Yeah, and
right.
why wouldn't you support the less evil if one of the two of them are going to win? Go ahead, Robert.
Right. Unless somebody is a masochist or and enjoys pain right. or is a sadist and enjoys right. seeing others suffer, there's simply no reason to not cast a vote against the candidate who's going to do far less harm. And it's not just a case of the lesser evil. To vote for the candidate who's going to do far less harm is a good thing, not a bad thing. It's not an evil. And Trump has done many good things, and his policies in many respects are very good. He's lacking in a number of things. He was not my first choice for the candidate for the Republican Party. DeSantis was. Cruz was in 2016. But nonetheless, compared to the alternative, Clinton back in 2016, Biden in 2020, and now, of course, Harris and Waltz, there's no contest. For Harris and Waltz, their two great idols are the promotion of unlimited abortion and unlimited oppressive LGBTQ immorality. And their ways of achieving those two objectives are equally heinous because it involves things like suppression of free speech, suppression of free exercise of religion, the promotion of a major illegal immigration scam in order to turn swing states and border states blue, appointment and nomination of justices to the court, who have no respect for the integrity of constitutional safeguards for our liberties, attempting to tamper with the court through packing the court and through insisting on term limits. The current term limit that Harris wants would immediately retire three conservative justices from the court, and that's the whole reason for it. It's entirely politicized, and in addition, of course, the politicized prosecution of their chief political opponent. Now, these are republic-destroying moves, and they're being done in order to promote these two great idols. These two great idols that they have are antithetical to two central, arguably the most important principles outlined in the creation text that Jesus himself cited as normative for all Christian sexual ethics, indeed all ethics. Namely, that God has intentionally designed us as sexual counterparts, male and female. And for this reason, a man may become joined to a woman, the two become one flesh. And the design of male and female is integrated in Genesis 1, 26 to 27, with their creation in God's image and likeness. So there's an intersection of the two, which is a way of saying that what we do sexually can either enhance or efface that image bearing. And these are the two things that they're attacking, right? What does abortion do? Abortion is the killing of human beings, made innocent human beings, made in the image of God. And of course, their promotion of an LGBTQ agenda
is aiming at the complete obliteration of a male-female requirement for sexual ethics or even any understanding of a biological basis for maleness and femaleness as given by their creator. So these two idols, and again, they're not ancillary issues, they're not side issues for Harris and Waltz, they are the prime issues on which Harris and Waltz are running. So to cast a vote for them, or to fail to cast an effective vote against them, is being complicitous to a grave evil in our society, and Christians cannot be morally responsible and engage in such failures.
Robert, Fred here. You've done an excellent job of outlining the differences between the two candidates, the key differences between the two candidates. And for Christians in particular, why there is a huge chasm between the two. So what do you say to groups like Evangelicals for Harris? They seem to be saying, overlook all of those things that you just talk about because we don't like Trump's personality.
To them, I would say the prime issue is policy. Policy and court appointments.
Yep.
Because those policies expressed in executive orders, in legislation, and in court appointments will carry on a legacy far beyond the tenure of that political candidate and will affect not just small groups, but the entire country and for generations to come. As far as character goes, of course, in the past, like 2006 and before, Trump did lots of horrible things sexually. Fully agree. He has not promoted it since in public. He has apologized for it. There's been no occurrence of any other incident of that sort. Harris also has less than a sparkling character resume behind her. She slept around with Willie Brown for political gain for years. And then, of course, and when that was no longer profitable for her, she left for other men. She hardly is concerned with appropriate sexual behavior. She married a man, Doug Emhoff, who had sexual intercourse with their nanny and subsequently slapped a woman who he thought was paying undue attention to another man. This is the man she married, so this is clearly not a major concern for her in her own life, and I suspect it's one reason that they've been, well, they have promoted it recently, but not to the hilt that they might otherwise do. Character flaws, when somebody sees character flaws in a candidate, one has to ask, how does it affect their policy? That is the critical thing. And how does it affect their court appointments? And I've not seen any major effect on Trump with regard to that behavior. Now, he is not as good in promoting the male-female prerequisite for relationships that he should in policy. He at least is against transgender tyranny towards minors, what effectively amounts to state-sponsored child abuse. He's not as good on abortion as we want him to be. He's backtracked on a few things. But you can't compare a man who appointed three justices that sent Roe v. Wade and Doe packing to a woman who's one of two's greatest idols is that of promoting abortion for all 9 months, unlimited, and even retracting any protections for children who are born alive from a botched abortion, which is not just virtual infanticide, but literal infanticide, and wants to prosecute pro-life protesters in ways that, I mean, look absurd compared to the kinds of prosecution that occurred during the BLM riots.
We're about out of time, Robert. Excuse me for interrupting you there. But absolutely. Bottom line here, two considerations when you when you're going to go to the polls, especially when it relates to the presidential election, is how much good can I do by voting for a candidate, and how much bad or evil sometimes, as Robert just described, can I stop by voting for a candidate? Those are two, I think, equally valid considerations when going to the polls. How much good can you do? How much evil can you stop with your vote for whoever the president of the United States will be? And I agree with everything Robert has said here. Robert, people want to read your blogs, follow you, know more about Wesley Biblical Seminary. What do they need to do?
Well, they can follow my Facebook, and also my time on X or Twitter. I do have an older online site, but needs to be updated.
Okay. And how do you spell your last name, Robert?
Gagnon, G-A-G-N-O-N.
We were talking about that. Is there any other pronunciation of that? French, maybe?
French pronunciation would be Gagnon.
Yeah, that's what
we bow to the pressures of the English-speaking world.
Well, French from Nova Scotia, and he used that pronunciation for your name. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate it very much. God bless you.
God's blessings.
Hey, Robert Gagnon. Joining us there.
Excellent piece.
Absolutely. We shall return with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.